JT live in Vegas.
No chance an inaugural expansion hockey team's going to make the playoffs. Stop. They did.
The Knights win the Pacific Division in their inaugural season.
This city must turn into a hockey city on the radio fast. Talked to a friend today and he said, listen, it's all gravy from here on out. I go, you're wrong. It's not all gravy. You didn't get here to lose in the first bleeping round.
He's gone. All through his legs. Carlson, shorthanded.
I'm going to let you act like a hockey town the way they do in Detroit and Boston.
We got to match the intensity that they're going to bring. They have the experience, but we got home ice.
Somebody with a pulse.
This playoff, every game matters.
Here come the Knight fans.
What Vegas is going to bring into that arena is going to be incredible.
Let's act like a hockey town. Let's do our job. Let's go balls out every day for an hour. That's the only radio I do. I'm ready to go. I'm fired up.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
And now, live from Las Vegas, here's JT the Brick. Oh,
ah. Man, am I ready to go. JT with you next 4 hours. Big shows lined up. First this hour, heavy on the Vegas Golden Knights, courtesy of Golden Entertainment, all the PT's locations, Sierra Gold, Sean Patrick's, the SG Bar, the Stratosphere, wherever you're going to watch hockey, you'll walk in, I guarantee you'll love it. They're all over the playoffs. PT's, go on in and check out all the great offers that they have, the promotions, heading around hockey as we are ready to go. How does it feel, Vegas? We're on the verge of something electric tomorrow night as the Vegas Golden Knights open the second round of the postseason at home. I'll be in the building on a rare weeknight game. I'm off the radio as Fox takes the TV simulcast of the NFL draft from Dallas, and I'll be in the building and I'm ready to go. Where's the pre-party? Where can I buy your beer? Where are you buying me a beer? I've been on board. I gave up the Islanders for this team. I am from this town. I live here. I'm from New York, but I've been here a while, and I'm all on board. Let's go. Let's go. Where are we going? Where are we partying? What are we doing afterwards? I'm ready for this. This is what I live for. I live for major sporting events that are big. From the Super Bowl to the Final Four to the Stanley Cup to whatever it is. Floyd fighting Connor. Anything. I love it. Now we got to get going. The Raiders are coming. UNLV football is getting better. In the meantime, the Vegas Golden Knights are the story in this town, and they deserve the A block every day on this show. Tell me something about your experience tomorrow night. What are you doing at pre-party? When are you getting down there? What do you expect? Let's preview the game. We had the voice of the Sharks, Dan Ruzanowski, on yesterday. I have Shark guests lined up all throughout next week. Former players, some of their TV analysts are going to jump in here. We'll give you everything you need to know about the San Jose Sharks. Basically, they're bigger, they're stronger, and they're much more experienced. They're not experienced, they're much more experienced. You take Fleury out, you look at San Jose, and they've been on the verge of winning a cup for 6, 7, 8 years. Remember that little LA Kings run where they won 2 Stanley Cups? One of them was supposed to be the Sharks, and the Sharks collapsed that year. This fan base, this organization has been waiting longer. They've been patient. They've had their guts ripped out to try to win the cup. They are the perfect team to upset the Vegas Golden Knights if the Vegas Golden Knights don't bring their A game. You cannot get through this series. Look, the Kings were really good too, and the Knights swept them. But they were really tight games. 1-0 games, 1-goal games. I think the Sharks, it'll be a little bit higher scoring, but it's going to be tough. I expect the Golden Knights to lose a game or two in this series. I don't expect a sweep, and I think it's going to be tough. And up in San Jose, that place is a madhouse. It's a madhouse, and they are bitter fans. Those are the same fans of the 49ers, the same fans of the Giants and the A's and the Raiders. They got their football team taken away in the Bay Area, the Raiders to Vegas. That is not a friendly environment. Don't make it friendly at T-Mobile. I don't expect a lot of Shark fans coming. I do expect Vegas Golden Knight fans to go up there. Average ticket for game 3, $85. How does that feel? If tickets were $85 Thursday night, you could fill a stadium of 100,000 people that would pay that in this town to get in. How are you getting in if you don't have a ticket? What's your plan if you don't have a ticket to go to this game? PT's is our sponsor here for the show. I'd like you to go visit one of their establishments. But either way, I want to hear these fans going. Start dialing during TC's show. Get on TC Martin's show. Get on my show. Get on my national show. Sound off like you got a pair. 876-1340. We're going to have the chief marketing officer, Brian Killingsworth, on a little bit later on in the show. He's a real interesting story on the marketing side of this team and how they are handling the overwhelming amount of requests for everything from jerseys to T-shirts to tickets to everything that has to, you know, evolve around this team. It's an incredible job. I want to know from him personally as he comes in studio how they are prepared for this run if it gets to the Stanley Cup. And I'd like to hear from some fans. You know, we're an honest live radio show. Has this experience been great all the time? Are you able to get your gear? I know you can't get your tickets unless you're a season ticket holder. How has this experience under the umbrella of Mr. Foley's Golden Knights been? The Sharks are in town. The NHL's in town. They're listening to the flagship. Let's tell some good stories about this team and how it's been. If you have a negative story about it, we'll take your call. But I think for the most part, everybody's really excited about the way they've been treated by this organization. 876-1340. Also, Scott Baer is going to join us from a few minutes at Raiders headquarters in Alameda. He's been right there on the ground with John Gruden at Raider practice. He will give you the up-to-date information on the Silver and Black heading into what will be an interesting draft on Thursday. Most mock drafts have the Raiders selecting a defensive player. I think it'll be the linebacker Roquan Smith out of Georgia, if he's available. I think that John Gruden's got enough weapons on the offensive side with Derek Carr, with the running backs, with the receivers, Amari Cooper, that the Raiders got to get out of there with more depth on defense. And as we'll talk about with Scott coming up here, I think the Raiders were very active in this offseason bringing in new players. I don't know how great these new players are, but if a couple of them stick and become starters, that's one or two less players that the Raiders have to find in the draft who are going to start. And also Russell Baxter, the football guru from Bax Football, he's going to join us in about 20 minutes with his opinion on what's going to happen in the first round of the draft with the quarterbacks. Here's what's crazy about this today. As of today, the big rumor from Adam Schefter, and now it's leaking out to other sites, is that Cleveland is going to take the number one pick at quarterback. It's either going to be Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen from Wyoming. I agree with a lot of people. I've said this weeks ago. If there was one franchise that could screw this up, it's Cleveland. Baker Mayfield does not deserve to be the number one pick, just like Tim Tebow and Johnny Manziel and Ryan Leaf and Jamarcus Russell did not deserve to be the number one pick. Ben Roethlisberger was the number 11th pick. He's going to the Hall of Fame. All they should do at Cleveland is take the safe pick because the organization needs to get back on track. To me, that pick's Sam Darnold, the quarterback out of USC. But the problem with that pick is everybody's going back and looking at USC quarterbacks and saying, well, look what happened to Matt Leinart. Look at some of these other quarterbacks that came up through USC. Who cares? This is a new kid. This is a big body guy. This is a durable quarterback. So Cleveland, if they screw it up and take Baker Mayfield 1 or Josh Allen 1, I believe that they're going to do what they've done for the last 20 years, bury the franchise with a bad pick. I don't root against college kids going pro. I want them all to be good. But Baker Mayfield is a reach because of his size, and there are better quarterbacks ahead of him. But if I'm wrong, you know where to find me. 876-1340 is the number to get through. And I also want to get into what's happening with the NBA. LeBron James, the winner of Game 5 in this round of the postseason, wins 83% of the series. So whoever wins this game tonight between Indiana and Cleveland, the odds say 83% go on to win it. I think LeBron's already won this series. It'll be interesting to watch. The Spurs were eliminated by the Golden State Warriors. We'll talk about that coming up here in a little bit. And I'm fired up. I'm really fired up for the rest of the hockey playoffs now that the Capitals have advanced, Sidney Crosby and the Penguins. So you have some of the best players in hockey who are still alive. That, to me, is really exciting going forward. So I'm going to get out here a little bit quick. We're going to line up our guest. We'd like to hear from you. Again, 10 minutes without a hockey call is embarrassing going into a game tomorrow night. If you're a hockey fan, use the format. Take advantage of it. We're heavy with football today, but I'd like to get in some good vibes for the Golden Knights as I'll be in the building tomorrow night, which should be a madhouse. Should be an absolute madhouse, and you fans really deserve it. What will be the final score of Game 1? A lot of guys didn't bet the under last series. Would have been a lot of money. What do you like? 6 goals in Game 1? 7 total? Or are you going to play it tight because it's the postseason? Scott Baer, Raiders insider, on deck.
This man right here has a lot to do with why I'm here today. The timing is right. Really doesn't have anything to do with the contract. I just want to be a part of the Raiders again. I want to finish my coaching career as an Oakland Raider.
John Gruden, we'll get to Scott Baer in a moment, a Raiders insider up at the Raider facility. And, you know, the veteran minicamps are underway, and John Gruden looked lean and fit and ready to go and was really excited to be out on the field yesterday. And I think the Raiders are off to a really good start. They got a lot of weapons, but they got to hit a home run in the draft. And we'll get to that. We're also talking about the Vegas Golden Knights with the kickoff of round 2, a home game, as they're the Pacific Division champions. What an honor for a city this big, this entertainment city, to host a game like this coming up tomorrow night. Michael, on the flagship of the Golden Knights, thanks for waiting.
Hey, for sure. So I see the game going 2-1 Golden Knights. I don't see it being a huge scoring game. I know everybody keeps saying that, but, man, it's going to be tight. The Kings, it's going to be like the Kings, to where it's going to be a battle, man. We're fighting for everything we got, and the Sharks are bringing it too, but I don't see it. Maybe 3-2 us, but I see it being 2-1.
Yeah, I'm more. Thanks for the call. I'm more going down that road of 3-2 or 4-2. I think that the Golden Knights are going to be able to get to this goaltender who doesn't have the experience of Fleury and maybe get and pepper him early and get off to a pretty good start. But it's going to be tough to expect Fleury to throw shutouts in one goal games throughout this next round against a team as experienced as the Sharks. I think it's going to be a little bit higher scoring. Scott Baer, kind enough to join us, the great Raider insider who's been working around the clock for NBC Sports Bay Area. And Scott, good to talk to you again. How excited was it for you now? Because I was there when Gruden came the first time around. How electric, exciting, unique is it now to cover John Gruden coming out of the booth of Monday Night Football?
I think those were three pretty good words, my friend. Electric is definitely one of them, and definitely unique. Last year, they had kind of hip-hop like as their soundtrack to all their Jack Del Rio press conferences. Now they have John Gruden, who you can hear from Alameda across the Bay Bridge. He's loud, he's funny, he's engaging, he's motivating, but he's also teaching players, and I think that they like that. He went out and challenged Derek Carr the very first day, tried to set a tone, basically saying, hey, you better study up, and of course Derek Carr had studied up, and he performed well with audibles and changes of pace and things like that. That was encouraging to see that these players are absorbing these new systems quickly. It's only one step, but it was a big one for John Gruden, considering how long he's been away from the coaching rank.
Scott Baer is our guest. Yeah, he talked about the field being his laboratory and being back again, and that's where coaches want to be. And, Scott, we both know how demanding he's going to be. I don't expect him on the first day of veteran minicamp or even early on at certain points in Napa for him to just implode on certain days. But there will be days that are much more difficult than what the Raiders were used to in years past. There's been 9 coaches since Gruden left, and I think Gruden is the toughest taskmaster of all of them. When you talk to the veterans, what do they think, especially the guys who have not played for him?
Yeah, I think that they like it. I think that they're also sort of curious, number one, can John Gruden keep this up every single day? And I think we know the answer to that is going to be yes. And because that tone may be set, I think that players are going to have to respond to it, because there are going to be consequences coming from that. I don't think that last year's group handled 2016's success very well. I think there was a little bit too much confidence and swagger and too many kind of, you know, hands going up at the first sign of adversity. I think this team is going to be tested early on. That's how they're going to do it. There's a lot of talk that John is so good at kind of riffing on and making fun of about taking it back to 1998 and what that actually means. One thing is that I think this team is going to have an old school physical mentality, and they're going to like practice. They're going to like playing. They're going to like working hard, or they're going to have to find a new place of employment.
Scott Baer is our guest. Scott, before we get to the upcoming draft tomorrow and what the Raiders might do, they brought in a lot of bodies here this offseason. We talked to you last about Tier 2 free agency and how active they were. What did you get from that takeaway? Because I'm fascinated by the working relationship in progress with Reggie McKenzie and John Gruden, and now them coming into a war room together before the draft and bringing in so many new players on the defensive side. Did they bring in more players than you expected? Because over a week or 6 day, 7 day period, I thought they brought in guys I could barely keep up with it. What was it like for you?
Yeah, it was definitely an intense period. I also think that it reflects what John Gruden has talked about, in that the Raiders need to get more out of their last three draft classes. I actually just wrote about this on our website, basically saying that outside of Amari Cooper, it's hard to find a true impact player, and there's even very few serviceable starters from the time that he got selected on into the future. And I think that when you don't have a lot of impact players in those draft classes, what John Gruden's done is he's put some Band-Aids over things, basically importing 22, 23 guys, lots of them veterans, lots of them on short-term contracts, hoping that they can hold down the fort in time for the next wave of young players to come up, either guys that they, as he put it, quote, that they have to hit home runs in this draft, or if they can develop guys to get more out of the 2016 and 17 draft classes that has been previously received, to get this roster up to where it needs to be. So, yes, there was a lot of free agency. It does not change the fact that they have to reverse some trends, and they really need to strike gold in this draft. Maybe not immediately, but over the course of the next 2 years, they really need to start paying dividends. That has a lot to do with what Reggie wants. John Gruden, though, I believe has either final say or darn close to it. He's also charged with developing these players after they come in. It's on Gruden and Gunther and Olsen to make them into primetime NFL players.
Wrapping it up with Scott Baer. Well, I wasn't shocked by it because I know they need cornerback help. Darrell Worley was signed. He was released by the Eagles, where he played with Carolina, but coming to the Eagles and then arrested earlier a little while ago, found passed out in a car, then became combative with police. He was tasered. A gun was recovered at the scene. I know the Raiders and how they do due diligence and what Mark Davis believes when it comes to separate issues like domestic violence. How much homework went into this signing here? How good of a player is he? Because I'm assuming if they were going to take a risk like this with a character issue, that they think this guy can step in and start.
I mean, the guy has 25 starts and 31 games over two seasons. He's done a lot of starting. He's been very impactful during his brief time. And they did talk to a lot of people. That includes fellow West Virginia alums Carl Joseph and Bruce Irvin, who know him well. The interesting part is, if they count on him to be among their top three cornerbacks, is there a looming NFL suspension somewhere? As you well know, and as your listeners know, you don't have to be convicted by the court of law to be suspended by this league. So it's very possible that maybe he's a violator of the substance abuse policy or the personal conduct policy, whether that happens early or late. I definitely feel like they believe they can get something out of this guy. And if you add him to the mix from a strictly football perspective, that group of cornerbacks looks pretty good. Gary Conley not fully cleared yet. A lot of guys on social media are stressing, stop it. He's going to be fine over the course of this spring and summer. They expect him to start. You have him, you have Melvin, you have Worley, assuming he is eligible to play. That's a much better cornerback core than they had last year.
Scott, finally, with the pick 10 overall, you're around this team more than anybody I know. Do you got a gut feeling here? Because Roquan Smith, the linebacker out of Georgia, makes a lot of sense to me. Vita Vey, if they can get a defensive tackle that can step in and play, that's a good move. But overall, could they trade down and not move that far down and get another pick later on? What are you sensing?
Yeah, I'm sensing that that they would like to trade down and maybe add some picks. If they stick at 10, JT, you nailed it, man. You have good sources too. They like Roquan among those linebackers. They love Alabama defensive back Minkah Fitzpatrick, who I picked in my mock draft or whatever that's worth. Mm-hmm. Whether he falls or not is very interesting. But that pick at number 10 could be very valuable because of this quarterback run I'm sure that you talk a lot about, especially on your national night show, that we could see four guys go quarterbacks in the top 10. And what that does is that pushes talent down to the Raiders.
Yeah.
If one of those quarterbacks doesn't go, then the Raiders have leverage to go out and get more picks. So I think it could be Fitzpatrick or Smith early, or maybe they try to trade down somewhat, maybe get an offensive tackle or one of those second-tier defensive linemen.
Well, as I'm at the Sharks game versus the Golden Knights tomorrow, I'll have my phone open, and I'm looking for your coverage on the pick, your analysis. Great work. I know you're buried this time of year, Scott. Thanks for a few minutes of your time.
JT, anytime for you, brother.
You got it. Scott Bear, the number one insider up there who covers the Raiders. He's the guy. He's with the team. He travels with the team. He's there all the time, and he believes defense just like I do. Great point that he made about you want, if you're a Raider fan, you want these quarterbacks to go in the first five picks because that means those great defensive players now are going to be available from pick number 6 to number 10 where the Raiders go. So the Raiders will have leverage to trade back and still get a good defensive player or at least get the best player they want on defense. The Raiders, last year when I went to training camp, we did the show from Napa, and they're coming up to me, oh man, we drafted Gerrion Conley. Woo, we got this kid, Brick. Obi Melinfaunu, he's going to play hybrid. Both of them never played. Conley hurt the whole year, played a game, looked good. Obi came in way over his head late in the season, didn't look very good, and they were the first two picks. Defensive guys, first and second round. The Raiders must hit a home run with the 10th pick overall. That guy needs to be playing opening night, Monday Night Football, at home in Oakland, next to Khalil Mack, and he better be able to tackle. If they have that, then the Raiders are going to be better than they were last year on defense, and they have to be if they're going to compete for the AFC West. When we come back, the football guru, Russell Baxter, national perspective of the draft. What quarterback will go number one? And then after that, Brian Killingsworth will be in studio, the chief marketing officer for your Vegas Golden Knights. On a marketing perspective, how cool is that job? How would you like to be marketing this team? Going forward on the run they're on. What a time to be a Knights fan.
Snap to Mayfield. Fakes a handoff. Back to pass. He's going to take a deep shot down the near sideline. Marquise Brown. He's got it! 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. It's a touchdown! Oh, mama!
Baker Mayfield. Could he go number one overall in the draft? JT The Brick Show. Fox Sports Radio at JT The Brick on Facebook. At JT The Brick, one of my premier NFL insiders we bring in every few weeks because he knows the league inside and out. The football guru, Russell Baxter, joins us. And Russell, I just got a weird feeling about Baker Mayfield. I like him in the first round. I like him midway through it. But I don't like him number one overall. What say you?
Well, I've kind of stuck to my script that I've gone with for the last couple of months, JT. And, you know, to me, we all know the Cleveland Browns, again, need a quarterback. You know, they made a habit out of starting 28 different starting quarterbacks since 1999. They went out and got Tyrod Taylor. They went out and got Drew Stanton. So veteran guys, especially Taylor, Nick's had take care of the football. But I still think it's hard to pass up on Saquon Barkley at number one because of the Browns situation. And here's what's very interesting. First off, John Dorsey is a veteran general manager. Remember, he drafted a quarterback last year, Patrick Mahomes, when he was in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed how quiet it's been in Cleveland? We're not hearing a lot of leaks, JT. I think they're just kind of biding their time. If someone makes them an offer they can't refuse, they're going to take it. But with all these quarterbacks, and you know this as well as anyone, this quarter, probably the four quarterbacks. I'm not going to throw Lamar Jackson in there as well. I think there's an outside possibility he could still go in the first round. But Allen, Darnold, you know, this whole crew, Mayfield,
Josh,
you know,
Allen.
Rosen. It doesn't seem like any of the four have really separated themselves. And if you're the Browns, I don't see why you don't get the running back and the quarterback within the first four picks.
I would agree with you. I think that Barkley clearly, and from talking to people I know in the know, is the best player clearly in the entire draft. But Dorsey has a track record of looking for running backs later on. And I'm just wondering if he thinks he can find value there. I would think the Giants at number two, does that sound obvious that if he's still there, Barkley at number two, he's perfect for the Giants because they're sticking with Eli Manning?
Well, yes. You know, they did address the offensive line to a degree with Nate Solder. But remember all the guys who left this offseason. Now, granted, Justin Pugh, Weston Richburg, DJ Fluker all had very short seasons last year due to injuries. So they still need to address that aspect as well. You know, if I'm the Giants and Barkley is not there per se, I think that's a team where somebody could trade up. And if you're Giants, you ideally want to trade down because a guy who intrigues me, and as he does most people, is probably the top-rated guard in this draft, and that's Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame. The last I checked, Notre Dame's produced some pretty good guards as of the last couple of years.
Russell Baxter's our guest, the football guru, right here on Fox Sports Radio. I'm intrigued by the Jets at number three. We had a Jets insider on yesterday that made an interesting point. If the Jets traded up to get to three to get Baker Mayfield, and Baker Mayfield isn't there at number three, typical Jets again, they'll get a quarterback, but they won't get their guy. What are you hearing in regards to the Jets pick?
Well, the other screaming need for the Jets besides the quarterback is also the pass rush. So let's say he's not there, okay? Let's say someone takes one of the quarterbacks at one in the Browns and Barkley goes at two and the Jets are sitting there at three. I think they would be pretty content, honestly, JT, if they took Bradley Chubb because they do have a screaming need in terms of the pass rush. But I have to throw out this oddity. Let's say they take Chubb, and let's say they don't take a quarterback. The New York Jets have not selected an offensive player of any kind in the first round since Mark Sanchez in 2009.
Incredible.
No wide receiver, no running back, no tight end, no offensive lineman. You have to go back to 2009 to any kind of offensive player they took for the first round pick.
Russell Baxter is our guest. And then Elway at number five. What does Elway want to do? Because it looks to me five, and I'm going to be making my top five a little bit later on tonight. I either think Arizona trades into five or Buffalo trades up to get to five to get one of the quarterbacks, the top four quarterbacks along with Barkley, who I think will go high. Do you think that five Elway trades out of that? Or am I missing something there with Case Keenum? And Elway might love a quarterback there that he's not blowing smoke about.
Yeah, but I think to me Case Keenum is not the long-term solution, but I also don't think he's a one-year solution. So I agree with you. If I'm Denver, I'm trying to move back because, you know, even though the numbers overall in terms of the Denver defense last year seemed like they were pretty good, if you watch that Denver defense, you're not going to convince me that they were not one of the better defenses in the league, okay? I saw them eaten alive by the Philadelphia Eagles. I saw their number of games where they just melted down. I mean, you know, they were a poor team for a reason. It just wasn't their quarterback play. Of course, Aqib Talib is now gone as well. I'm not saying they'd go cornerback that high, but I could definitely see them down and trying to get more defensive help. They're another team that, you know, might want to look for running back help. You know, they did let C.J. Anderson go a couple weeks ago.
Russell, you know, the Raiders are coming to Vegas in a couple of seasons. John Gruden now with veteran minicamp. Khalil Mack's not there. They'll figure out a way to work out that contract in years to come. But the Raiders have to get stronger on defense. I think Gruden has enough offensive weapons to start this season and for Carr to be explosive. But on the defensive side, this has been a hole for a number of years. They've been missing on corners. They've been missing on safeties. What do you expect the Silver and Black to do with number 10?
Yeah, you know, you bring up a great point. Remember last year they went defensive back with the first two picks. This offseason they have signed just about everybody, including Darrell Worley, a couple of days ago, who obviously we heard about his issues in Philadelphia with the Carolina Panthers high draft pick a couple of years ago. Leon Hall was brought in. I mean, he's a veteran as well. So they have tried every which way to fix that defense, and it's almost kind of taken away from what's gone on the offense. I still think they need outside linebacker help as well. So I'm not sure what kind of position they're going to put themselves in. I don't envision them being a team that does a lot of moving around because, you know, JT, if you look at arrivals and departures from one team, I mean, the Raiders own this offseason. They've signed a lot of players. They've also jettisoned a lot of players.
Finally, give me something on this draft that we should keep an eye on, because I believe this will be one of the more talked about drafts for a decade to come, because there's so many home run hitters, so many high-profile quarterbacks. There's definitely going to be a bust. I don't root for a bust, but there will be one, and there'll be a breakout player that we didn't see coming. You've been doing this, Russell, a long time at a very high level. What's your gut feeling tell you about this first round and what to look for?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with the quarterbacks, but I, again, not to sound like a Barkley cheerleader, I think a Saquon Barkley doesn't come around that often. And I look at what his combination is. I mean, listen, Adrian Peterson, 2007, obviously the last 2 years too, JT, fourth overall picks. Ezekiel Elliott in 2016, Leonard Fournette last year, helped turn those programs around in Dallas and Jacksonville. But Barkley, to me, the ability to run and the ability to catch the football, okay? Let's say he does go to Cleveland. Think about him in Todd Haley's offense and what Le'Veon Bell did in Todd Haley's offense for the last couple of years in Pittsburgh and so on. I think the quarterbacks are going to be the headliners, but when the season starts, it's going to be the running back that steals the show.
Great minds think alike. Thank you. I agree with everything you just said. Good to talk to you, my friend. Hopefully we can recap in a couple of weeks with you.
Absolutely, and enjoy tomorrow night. It's going to be a blast.
You got it. Russell Baxter, the football guru. Give him a follow at Bax Football Guru, especially heading into the draft. This guy grinds, and he's got contacts everywhere. I agree with him. The best player is the running back. Why don't you want to take a running back? Why is everybody now so afraid in 2018 to get a running back? Oh, I can get a running back later. Really? Who? Who do you? Here's the biggest misnomer in the draft for any real football fan. Say you think you're going to get lucky with Tom Brady. Everybody forgets this. Nobody wanted Tom Brady. Nobody. Because he went in the sixth round. If anybody really wanted him, they would have took him in the fourth. Or they would have said, oh my God, I can't lose Brady. I'm going to take him in the fifth. I'm going to trade up. No one wanted him. He fell all the way to the sixth round. Luck. Pure luck. Let me give you another one. Russell Wilson. Seattle, going to be a Hall of Famer in my mind. He went in the third round. No one wanted him. If someone wanted him, they would have traded into the second round. We're talking about taking Baker Mayfield number one, and Russell Wilson went in the third round? So if you want a guy, go get him. Don't tell me I'm going to get a running back later. Who? How do you know he's going to be available? If he's that important to you to have an elite running back, go get him. Have him in camp, and then build the rest of your roster. Have we forgotten what the running back position is? Bobby, you're raising your hand and saying thank you. Let me say it again. Have we forgotten what a handoff up the middle on third and two means so you don't have to punt? Do we just think we're living in a Drew Brees world where we're in the shotgun on every play five wide? You need a running back who is a defining player, and there's one. Saquon Barkley. I say take him number one if you're Cleveland and then get your quarterback at number four. When we come back, we'll talk to the chief marketing officer of the Vegas Golden Knights. Marketing side, pretty big deal. This is a good team to market. Be a good side job. I used to be a cold caller, stockbroker. How would you like to be in the offices cold calling with Vegas Golden Knights on your business card? We'll talk to Brian, and hey, I'm not leaving until I get a hockey call again. Let's go. Let's go. I don't have to prod yet. No cattle prodding today. Let's get some playoff hockey fans at 876-1340.
this man right here.
To be gritty in the corners and not lose a puck and make the right plays at the right time to create some offense. And again, like those two games I played, it was good to get back in and win two games. I made a big play in the third game, but other than that, I felt like I could be better, and I'm going to look to bring my game even more this series.
All right, David Perron, JT, back with you on the flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. We had to reschedule. Brian Killingsworth, he'll join us here coming up on Friday. Gives you an open phone line if you want to get through on how you're getting into the game. That's what I want to know. I got two buddies in town, want to go to the game. How do you get into the game other than begging or getting on StubHub? What's your angle here for the rest of the postseason? 876-1340. Can't wait to be there tomorrow night. I wasn't expecting it, but with the movement of the draft, I'm able to get in there, and I can't wait. Saturday early start, which will be a lot of fun, especially when that game ends. Hopefully a little sunlight outside makes for a big Saturday night. I'm not a big believer in splitting at home. When you open up a series in the NBA, whatever sport it is, baseball especially, if it's a best of five, this is best of seven, you've got to get the first two at home. The Shark Tank is going to be volatile, and it's a tough place, and that's where you want the split. So that's how I would hope the series would go. Vegas Golden Knights win game one and two. They go up to the Shark Tank. They win a game. They come back home up 3-1. That's how you advance in the playoffs. We're seeing game seven just underway, Toronto and Boston, no score. That is a huge game because, again, Toronto, original six teams, these fan bases are desperate to advance. And I think both of these teams, Boston about a month ago, looked like the best team in all hockey. And if they don't get out of the first round, and if Toronto gets in, they represent Canada, and that's a huge deal because they have a tremendous history here, and it's been a while since they've won. Before we get out of here, I wanted to play some sound from Derek Jeter, which sets up nicely to what I've been talking about for a long time about tanking in sports. Derek Jeter was on Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, and it aired last night, and that's a Toronto goal. Toronto scores. They're up 1-0 just underway in the first period. Toronto takes the lead 1-0 underway. So back to Derek Jeter. Brian Gumbel really grilled him hard. He's now the first African-American CEO in baseball history of a team with the Marlins, and it's not going well. And Gumbel pushed him on the fact that the team could be tanking to get better in years to come.
Tanking? What is not tanking?
Tanking is not trying your hardest to win ball games every day.
We're trying to win ball games every day.
If you trade your best players in exchange for prospects, it's unlikely you're going to win more games in the immediate future.
When you take the field, you have an opportunity to win each and every day.
So this got a little bit chippy going back and forth, and I was enjoying it. I'm a big Yankee fan, big Jeter guy, and I was watching this with my wife last night, and she was like, whoa, what's going on here? Where is this going? And clearly, Brian Gumbel kept pressing Jeter on the specifics of this team.
You never tell your players that you are expected to lose. You don't do that. You should take that as a slap in the face. As a player, you should take that as a slap in the face.
Do you expect them to contend?
I do. I do. If I don't believe in the players that we have on the field, who's going to believe in them?
But as an executive, it looks like you're delusional if you believe otherwise.
Well, call me delusional.
So I thought this was really good content to play here because we're seeing a lot of tanking going on in sports. And what's happening is the youngsters who are coming up behind us are now getting used to tanking as a conversation that's happening. When I grew up as a kid, this conversation never came up with my dad, my grandfather. We never sat around a barbecue and I heard my dad talking to my grandfather about tanking. Now Mark Cuban gets caught for tanking and fined $700,000 because he actually admitted to it on a podcast. Derek Jeter did the opposite. He pushed back at Brian Gumbel and said that we don't have to have a great team, but we have to compete every day. I went to my son's high school football practice today. I do that before the show. I sit in the stands and watch my kids go through the motions and go through practice with their teammates. And it's the pure essence of sports, practice. Every day, you don't know if you're going to win or lose. Some programs are better than others. But coaches are supposed to go out every time they take the court, take the diamond, take the field, and instill in athletes to give 100%. And I believe we're going through a window in professional sports, where we're starting to believe, and it might be because of social media, it might be because of television, I don't know what it is, I haven't put my finger on it yet, but we're now accepting it, and I blame the media, because there are too many members of the media, especially in local markets, that are saying, let's lose on purpose. We have a radio show. We have a TV show. Let's lose because it's the right thing to do to get better. And then once that breaks down from a media perspective, it seeps into society. People hear it in their cars. They catch it on the news. They hear people talking about it in blogging. And it becomes acceptable. When Jerry Tarkanian coached here, I always hear about the great rebel teams. They would bury you. They would annihilate you. They would step on your throat because they felt like they were underdogs when no one took them seriously in the beginning. And when they got there, they had a championship level that they performed on in practice. And for Derek Jeter, you know, I might be sounding like I'm defending him, which I am. I think Jeter is trying to tear down the team in the boardroom financially, but instill in the players, I'm Derek Jeter. You better play your ass off every day. And that's what, if we don't win, we better compete. And there's a fine line now between tanking and competing. Because when you take a player out of a game, when he's healthy and he's old, and he can still play, I'm starting to think that that's a level of tanking that is becoming acceptable. So I thought that was really important. Last night, I thought Kevin Durant was unbelievable in the final 4 or 5 minutes of that game when San Antonio cut the lead from 10 to 2 points, and then Durant late took it over and won the game.
Durant, right side of the logo. Now goes giddy up down the lane to the rim. Two-hand slam for KD, right from midcourt to the rim.
This was a tight game for the Warriors, and it shouldn't have been this tight. They're playing without Steph Curry. San Antonio's playing without the great Kawhi Leonard, but the Warriors grinded it out, and they advanced to take on New Orleans.
Ginobili won't shoot. He'll dribble it out, and the Golden State Warriors are moving on to the second round. They beat the San Antonio Spurs 99-91. They win the best of seven, 4-1, and it's time on to bring on the big birds from the Big Easy.
Yeah, that's Tim Roy, who's the voice of the Golden State Warriors. I was really interested in watching that because I like Manu Ginobili. And Manu Ginobili, after the game, a lot of people were hugging him afterwards, wondering if he played in his final game.
I've been contemplating retirement forever, so nothing changed. I just don't know.
Yeah, I think Ginobili will come back one more year because Greg Popovich wasn't there. Greg Popovich was not there because of his wife passing away, so he'll come back. I have a special announcement. I'll be hosting a special remote on Cinco de Mayo at Poncho's in downtown Summerlin. Poncho's is a legendary Mexican restaurant in Los Angeles that is now here in downtown Summerlin. The memorabilia is amazing. Raider memorabilia, Golden Knights memorabilia, Brett Favre jerseys, Elway jerseys. If you haven't been there, the food is outstanding. All these tequila specials that they're going to have. And we're going to have about 6 or 7 Raider legends come in for a special Cinco de Mayo broadcast. I'll be on from noon to 2, and then I'll host a Q&A from 2 to 3 o'clock with Jeff Barnes, who's won a Super Bowl, the great Rod Martin, who had 3 interceptions in the Raider Super Bowl victory, Napoleon McCallum, a great Raider, and about 4 or 5 more. So if you're a Raider fan, please make some time to come out and join us on what should be a great Cinco de Mayo. And what was supposed to be Cinco de Mayo going into the Triple G Canelo fight. So this might be a place, now that you're not looking at your watch, going to watch the fight, you could sit back there. And we're going to be doing more and more of this. They're telling me here in the building, a lot more remotes based around me getting out on the weekend, because I work Monday to Friday to get out on the weekend and host a remote or two based around what the Silver and Black are doing. There's a lot of Raiders, former Raiders, who live in town, and more will be coming here in years to come. So I'll have a great opportunity. Again, that's Cinco de Mayo at Poncho's, right there in downtown Summerlin. It's a big venue. The food's fantastic. Get there on Cinco de Mayo before noon. Get yourself a good seat, autographs, a Q&A, and a couple-hour radio show. I'm really excited to do that. All right, we're off tomorrow for the NFL draft. If you listen here to Fox, we'll have the simulcast. Fox Sports Radio, Kirk Menefee, Troy Aikman will be a part of it, Jay Glazer, really good crew, Joe Klatt from Fox Sports 1, he'll be a part of it too, and I'll be down at T-Mobile, ready to rock, ready to roll, ready for the Vegas Golden Knights. It'll be an epic night, 90 degrees, maybe going into the game, and excitement here, game one, get it and put it in the can. Don't mess with this series. The Sharks are nasty. They're physical. They'll want to fight. They'll want to muck it up. They'll want to make it dirty. Get out of there with the victory. Thanks to Golden Entertainment, home of PTs. And tonight I'll be at the SG Bar. Great place to go to. The food's outstanding. Check me out at the SG Bar. Thanks to PTs. Have a great night, everybody. Looney joins me in a few minutes. Tonight we unveil our big board, our mock draft, but we only give you the first five picks because the rest of it, no one cares about. That's next.